So this is Forrest Solis interviewing Aaron Higgins on May 28, 2016 at 8:45 a.m. for the Creative Push Project. Okay, so can you maybe give us a little background between you and the father of your first child, and then like all the way back to the conception? Can I set us up?
Okay. My husband and I met here in Flagstaff while I was in college. I had a best friend that moved to Flagstaff while we were in college. While we were in high school, she moved here, and I would come visit her on breaks, spring break, summer break. She came back to New Mexico for a little bit, and then came back here to help her family. So I was always coming back and forth to Flagstaff, and my husband was someone that she was friends with during high school. They all hung out together, went out together. And we were friends first here. We would just see each other when I would come visit, and everybody would go, you know, downtown to the bars, go to the dance, the barn dance for the rodeo. So we were friendly, saw each other semi-regular basis, but it was about 4 or 5 years before we actually started dating. I was living in Phoenix, and I came up for a weekend to see my friend, and we went out downtown, and I was joking, and I said, maybe I would see him this weekend. She goes, oh, no, he moved to Phoenix. I said, oh, okay, well, maybe I'll have to find out where he's at in Phoenix, and we can kind of get together. It'd be nice to have another friend down there. And as soon as we walked into Maloney's, he was standing there checking his coat because it was winter. So after that, we talked and exchanged numbers and started dating down in Phoenix. We moved back up here to Flagstaff so that he could help his dad with his business. His dad has a wholesale business. He wholesales to gift shops in the area and within the Southwest. He imports Mexican goods and sells them. So he started helping his dad out with the business, and I started work with the Department of Public Safety Crime Lab, and I've been there now for 14 years. And we've been here in Flagstaff for 14 years. I guess, let's see, we waited a while to get married. We were together about 6 years before he proposed. And after we were married, we started talking about kids like everybody does. And it was about 2 years after we were married, we started trying to have children. Unfortunately, my first conception was a miscarriage, which was pretty hard. You're super excited and you go in and you have that first ultrasound, and there was no heartbeat for the baby. So I had to have a DNC for that. My body just wanted to hold on to it and liked being pregnant. So shortly after that, though, it was less than 2 months, I was pregnant with my daughter. And I had her June of 2009. And my pregnancy was, oh, so much fun. I had really bad morning sickness. It lasted about 7 months, and it was all-day sickness. So it was really hard to eat. Smells were really hard for me to take. I could not go into the meat department at what is now Whole Foods if I came anywhere near it. It was bad. There were certain things that triggered it too. I wasn't able to eat eggs. If I ate eggs, it wasn't good. Hamburgers, which is funny because my mom said that's how she knew she was pregnant with all three of her kids, especially after me. I was her first. She couldn't eat hamburger either at all during her pregnancy. So that was a little hard.
Were you, since you had the first miscarriage when you found out you were pregnant, it's like that's really close, like just a couple months after a DNC, were you like extremely nervous every day that, like, were you able to feel confident about that second pregnancy?
I think where we were most nervous, both my husband and I, were the first appointment. And getting in for that first appointment to see, is everything okay? And you hold your breath while they're doing that ultrasound. Because you can see it in the nurse's face that's doing the ultrasound that first time. She just kind of glazed over. And you knew there's something wrong. And she said, I'm going to let you talk to the doctor. So, your heart just sinks in your chest. So the first appointment was huge for us to go into. And the first time we didn't tell our family, we were waiting and thought, okay, we'll find out and wait and see, make sure everything's okay before we tell anybody that we're pregnant. And it was very hard after to call your family and tell them, hey, I'm pregnant, but don't get excited because the baby doesn't have a heartbeat. I have to go in for a procedure to remove the pregnancy. So that was super emotional, especially calling my mom. Sorry. So that first appointment, we just kind of held our breath and wanted to make sure everything was okay. Because the whole time, I was almost, 10 weeks when they found out. I still had the morning sickness. I still had some weight gain. I also had another miscarriage after my daughter, which was the same. And that, I think that's the hardest part, as you know, that the pregnancy's not going to go anywhere, but you still have all the symptoms. And it still feels like you have that baby. So we were cautious then, and when they came back and said, everything's good, it was a big weight off at that point. We did, during the pregnancy, though, have a little bit of a, I wouldn't call it a scare, but it was very unnerving. We did all the tests that they have that are out there, and one of them is for Down syndrome. And I got a call from the doctor after having that test, and he said, something's abnormal. We need you to go in for genetic testing. So that was another big, heavy sink. And not that it would have changed the outcome of us having the baby, but to know that you're potentially going to have a child that's going to need a lot of care, was a little bit hard to fathom and take in. And we just wanted to be prepared. So we had to go down to have more extensive genetic testing in Phoenix. That was a pretty huge day. And they do a 3D ultrasound to really examine everything and make sure the baby's okay. And you sit down and talk to a counselor and go over all your history, which brings up a lot of other things within the family, because they're really looking at all of your family history, genetics, disorders that could be in the family. So there was a lot of heavy information to have to soak in and take. My husband had what's called a pyloric stenosis. So when he was born, his diaphragm was very tight and it wasn't allowing him to, his body to bring all of the food in, and he would spontaneously vomit. So when he was 6 weeks old, he had to have a surgery. So that was there too, which we're like, oh great, something we didn't really think about. My grandmother has a blood disorder called thalassemia, and there's two forms of it. And she had the lesser, so there's minor and major. She had minor, but she also had two siblings that didn't survive past the age of two because they had the major. The blood cells can't carry, they're smaller, Some people mistake it for a form of sickle cell anemia. When they look at the cells, they end up having being very susceptible to blood cancers.
Don't talk over the barking, because then we'll just pause when it happens and then cut it out.
Okay. So the thalassemia, when you have the major, you can have a lot of blood disorders where blood cancers are more prevalent, also problems with bleeding. And so the two siblings that preceded her both died really young because of that. They were in Colombia, South America, so at the time they really didn't know what was going on, and she didn't really understand it to tell us later on and tell her children. So something that everybody kind of discovered later on in life, and I didn't even know until here I was going to have this genetic counseling, and my mom said, oh yeah, by the way, here's this in your background. So we had to discuss all of that, because these were all possibilities too, that could be going on. And through the process, what we did find out is that the technician who took my blood wrote down my date of my last period wrong. So all of the dates, their calculations were off for what the levels should have been in the blood. So it was an appointment that we really didn't need to have, because of it was like a week time period, a span of time. So that was quite interesting and a little disturbing at the same time. But it did give us a lot of peace of mind being there, going through all of that, having them really look at my daughter, who's now, you know, healthy, almost 7-year-old. But it did really give us that extra, okay, everything's okay. So we could continue on with that pregnancy and know that she was going to be healthy and that she didn't have any of these problems that we had looming in our genes, in our DNA.
It's terrible that minor mistake caused so much extra anxiety and stress.
Yeah, and it was about 2 weeks of sitting on it from the time we found out to the appointment. And not only were we anxious, but all your family and friends who are there for you for support, it's an awkward situation. They want to be excited for the pregnancy, but at the same time, knowing that you could have a problem, they just don't know how to handle it either. So I think for everybody, it was very stressful and very hard, because pregnancy, you want to be excited. There's a baby coming. And to have something like that in the mix brings you down a little bit. But in the end, we were very relieved that we weren't going to have to worry about some of these things anymore. We're going to get through it. And it also gave us a little bit more confidence that, you know, no matter what life was going to bring us, we're going to meet it. And it is what it is. You can't control everything. And you just have to learn how to deal with it. So I think that kind of set the stage for just raising our daughter, that there are a lot of things that are out of your control. Someone wrote a date wrong. Just looking at our genetic history, we've got a lot of stuff there in our genes. We can't control how they come together and what happens. You just have to be prepared and go from there and roll with it. It's not always our plan.
Okay, so the last, before we backtrack there, you were saying that you had morning sickness.
Yes.
Were you still able to put on weight, or did you lose weight?
I didn't put on a lot of weight at first. I was still putting weight on, but it was slow. which was also nice because I still fit in on a lot of my clothes. I was able to do this little trick with my pants on my, with a button and a hair tie to kind of give them a little bit of elastic pull. So I didn't even have to start wearing maternity clothes until it was about almost 6 months, 5-6 months in is when it was like, okay, these are a little, I can't do this anymore. I'm expanding. And I didn't really put too much weight on until the very end. One of the funny things that I like to tell my daughter and that people at work just thought was strange, you have those cravings while you're pregnant. My craving was for celery with cream cheese or some kind of cheese spread, laughing cow cheese on it. I just wanted to eat celery, especially those first 3 or 4 months. And my daughter, she loves celery. That she'll sit down and eat a whole bunch of celery. It was funny, I went to her school and I was helping the teacher with lunch in the classroom. They had a field trip. And she came back with her tray, and half of her tray was celery stalks. Like, well, you've liked celery for a while. And orange juice. I can't drink orange juice. I have a total intolerance for it with the acidity. It makes me very sick. And while I was pregnant with her, I just wanted orange juice. And it was very hard because I'd smell it and it was something I just craved. So I might take a drink and be like, okay, I hope this isn't gonna make me too sick. I'm like, well, I'm already sick from the morning sickness. We'll see. But she loves orange juice too. She just, if we let her, she would drink a gallon of it in a day. So those little things are out there looming too. And kind of, I find it funny later on to find out what she likes and what she has this natural tendency to. And I find that I had those cravings. The other one was green chili. I'm from New Mexico and I make a lot of foods with green chili in it. And especially the last 3 months when I really could stop the morning sickness was tapering off and going away. I just wanted to eat green chili and pinto beans, tortillas. And she loves those too. So it's, I think, kind of neat to kind of see how in the womb they already start putting some of their likes already coming out, and it's just amazing to me.
Was there anything about pregnancy that surprised you?
I think the biggest surprises were those little things that were someone else would see as a tragedy, like the first miscarriage. It not being, you know, everybody I knew, you got pregnant, you went in, you had your ultrasound, you had your pictures, you came back and everything was good. And to be one of those people that's in that minority and that's not your first experience, that was like a wake-up call that it's not the same for everybody. And we all have a little bit a different experience from it. And it also set the stage for the rest of the pregnancy to not expect things and not to take advantage either of the little things. I think the movement of her while she was in the womb was maybe a little surprising. She's very active. And to be sitting, you know, watching TV and you see this movement across your belly, like, whoa, what just happened? I told my husband it reminded me of Alien. When they have something growing inside of them and it just moves. She would move a leg or an elbow or something and you would see it ripple across your stomach. And it's just such a different feeling. And it's something that, you know, my husband couldn't relate to because he's not there. He doesn't have that experience. So It's like you want to share it too and let them experience, and it's hard to tell people about that, and especially, you know, a man and what you're feeling and how it's kind of affecting you, and you're like, whoa, there's a person growing inside of me, and they're moving a lot.
Even though, like, I expected certain changes, you know, that are, like, kind of textbook, I was still surprised when they happened to me, like, my nipples getting dark or, like, certain physical things, like, you know, just experiencing that movement and everything. It's that transformation is incredible.
Yes, it is very incredible, and it's so amazing to think of what's happening inside of you. Something else that did surprise me is how much I could feel in what she was doing. I would joke that I thought she was picking at the placenta, because I'd feel these little sharp pinches while I was working. And after she was born, when I would I breastfed, when I would feed her, she would pinch the back of my arm, and she still pinches. Like, when she gets nervous, she pinches, and I was like, see, I told you she was in there pinching. She's pinching something. And she'll pinch your hand when she gets nervous. She'll stand there, and I can tell she's very nervous and she's pinching herself. But I know she was doing that while she was growing inside my womb. I could feel it. And I'm not quite sure exactly what she was pinching, but she was pinching.
Actually, can you hear her hand movements? Is
that... Sometimes when they hit the table.
Yeah, maybe you need to be careful with that. Okay, so you're at 6 months, and then you go from 6 to 9. And can you tell us about that process? Did you prepare for the birth?
Yeah, we took the, you know, the birthing classes, and my husband and I, and went into that. It was interesting because one of the nurses, we found out, went to high school with my husband, small town, and her husband went to high school with him, and they lived right behind us, literally next door neighbors. So that was, you know, interesting, and to know that you have someone that you can go talk to if you have concerns or questions, you know, the labor and delivery nurse. And I think during that time, just the starting to actually put on, because I didn't gain a lot of weight in the beginning because of the morning sickness. Those last 3 months were pretty hard, seeing how much your body changes then. And even looking at, I think it wasn't until I looked at pictures and looked back at the pictures where I'm like, wow, I look like I'm swollen everywhere. Because that was something else that did happen very, very end. I ended up with preeclampsia, but it came on very fast. You know, 1 week, okay. Next week, not okay. That was in that period where you're going to those weekly visits right before you have the baby. And, yeah, just to see those little changes in a photo where you're like, okay, I didn't realize it then, but maybe this was already starting, because my face looks swollen. I'm like, can your nose swell? Because my nose looks really big in this picture. And when my mom first saw me after having her, that she came in and she's like, oh my gosh, you are very swollen everywhere. And to have that, you know, feeling that you don't normally have is can be a little disturbing. But we did go through, you know, we even started earlier than that, accumulating baby things. One of the stores here in town had gone out of business early on in the pregnancy, so we bought a few things from there just to be prepared. And we started getting the furniture and getting the crib ready. And something that did also happen in that period was we had an offer on our house, which I did not want to sell, because I'm like, I'm at the end of this pregnancy. I don't want to move. But a realtor was calling everybody in our neighborhood because we were over in the townhomes. She had a client that was going through a divorce, and he wanted to be in the townhomes because they were close to his kids. His ex-wife had a house just a couple streets over. So he was really wanted to stay close. And he also worked near here. But we, you know, we're like, we're comfortable. We're going to have a baby. We don't need to move right now. And then we found out there were some problems with our townhome. We already knew there were problems with the roofs. They did not put them on correctly. They didn't put any water barrier. So we had a lot of leaking in the wintertime with the snow. And we had an HOA meeting, and they told us that it was worse than they thought, and we were going to have assessments, and they didn't know when they were going to be fixed. And on the way back, my husband and I looked at each other and we're like, do we want to deal with this with a newborn and starting a new family? And maybe we should sell and move into a new place before. And we're on a big time crunch at that point. That was I think I was at seven months then. So we did, we sold the house, and we moved into our house here 2 days before I had McKenna.
So did the preeclampsia, did it change your vision of what the birth experience was going to be? Were they wanting to induce or do anything?
Yes. So the concern that I had at the very, it changed everything. I had a concern at the beginning of the pregnancy when we went into talk to our doctor. It wasn't my normal doctor that I went to. The doctor I had been going to, she had just recently dropped her obstetrics portion of her practice and was just doing the gynecological. So she had to refer me to someone else. And when I told her we're going to be trying to have a baby. So she referred me to another practice in town, and where she thought the doctors were really good. It was a little difficult to get in there because the doctors are really good and everybody wants to go there. I didn't get to see the first doctor I wanted, but one of the concerns I had, because there's another practice in town, where they rotate you through doctors during your pregnancy. You may not always have the same doctor, and I wanted to make sure I had the same doctor all the way through and who would be there when I had McKenna. And so when we went in and I talked to them, you know, they did that there, and my doctor said, there's only one time where I will not be here. I have a vacation planned, but it's not near it's far enough from your due date. Don't worry about it. I will be there. So when I went in for my appointment and my blood pressure was pretty elevated, it was, which really concerned him because my blood pressure was always really steady over the pregnancy. And he came in and he took my blood pressure. So that's when I knew there was something up. And it was pretty high. I don't remember the bottom number, but the top was 164, which I usually run about 110 over 70-ish. So he said, I'm going to send you over to the hospital. We're going to do some testing. This was right before lunch. I was supposed to be picking up lunch for all the ladies at work because of where I was going. And I went, oh, no, because they were teasing me. They said, you'll probably end up having to have the baby today because you're going to pick up lunch for us. Something's going to happen. Like, don't say that. So, yeah, I had to call them and tell them, I'm going to the hospital. They're going to do some more tests on me. And he wanted to check and make sure, since my blood pressure went up so rapidly from 1 week to the next, he wanted to check and see if anything else was affected. So my liver and kidney function. And so I went over and they drew blood and I had to give a urine sample. They ended up having me change and put one of the hospital gowns on. So at that point, I'm there by myself because I also told my husband this was one of the only appointments that he had missed. He was coming with me to all the appointments. I'm like, they're just going to check and make sure everything's okay. We don't have anything to worry about. We're still 2.5 weeks before her due date. It'll be fine. Don't worry. I was concerned because my ankles and legs started to swell the day before. And they were a little bit swollen for the last month of the pregnancy, but not like this. They were huge. I told them I had kinkles because my leg just went straight down. So I knew that was a problem. And then the blood pressure on top of it. And the doctor came in and he sat down and he said, I got your test results back. And he said, you know how I told you that I would be here no matter what for your delivery? Well, here's the deal. You have liver function being affected, kidney functions being affected, and it's happening really fast. So I want you to have the baby today. We're going to induce. And I'm going out of town. This is the weekend. So I just kind of stared at him for a second. And he's like, do you want me to go out there so you can scream? Or he's like, don't punch me. I'm like, well, it is what it is. I mean, I can't change it. So he said, this is the doctor that's on call, which I hadn't seen before. And he'd be in to come and talk to me later. And he would take care of me and get me in to start the whole process. And then he was going to have to leave. So that's like the beginning of the delivery. And it seems like it went downhill from there. Nothing I expected for that, which, again, we knew going in, it's not our plan, and it definitely wasn't my plan for the rest of that delivery. I think it was not, it definitely wasn't your typical delivery for most people. So there are some people at work that were getting ready to have kids. They asked how it was. I'm like, I'll wait until you have yours and then I'll let you know. Because if I tell you my story, you may not want to go and have a delivery because the preeclampsia was the least of the problems.
Can we pause 1 second?
As soon as the doctor told me that they were going to have to induce me because the preeclampsia came on so quickly and was already affecting my organs, they didn't want to have anything happen to my daughter or me because it came on so quickly. He said, normally we might put you on bed rest and try to keep you from delivering until you get closer to due date, but you're already 2.5 weeks away. The baby looked really good on the last ultrasound. Her lungs should be developed by now. So I feel comfortable inducing you. He said, I don't feel comfortable having you wait at this point because it's come on so quickly and your organs are affected. We could lose both of you pretty fast. So in my head, I'm trying to take it all in. But at the same time, I'm going, okay, first of all, I didn't tell my husband to come. He's going to kill me that he's not here right now. My parents were going to be coming, but not for a couple more days. My mom's going to be upset over this. And then there's the girls. They're all sitting there waiting for lunch, and it's never coming. And it's so funny what you think of, and because you're trying to kind of take it in, and I'm a planner. So this definitely not planned. So the first thing that goes through my head is I've got to make a list of things that I need to do. Where do I start first? And so it didn't really sink in the severity of the whole situation and how bad my blood pressure was and how that was going to affect the whole delivery until I think later when Ashley was checked into the hospital and got all of, you know, those ducks in a row and made sure, you know, I called my husband, told him, so they're admitting me to the hospital. This is why you may want to come. It's going to be, you know, a couple hours, but see what you can do. Get here. Which he was super upset. He's like, I knew I should have been there. I knew I should have come with you. You shouldn't be there by yourself right now. So it's fine. Do what you got to do. And go get the bag, because we had our bag already packed and ready for the hospital. And take care of our dogs. We have two beagles. It's like, get them situated. We'll have someone come over and take care of them. And then, you know, the next step would be, you know, call parents and let them know what's happening. So as soon as he got in and we got checked into the hospital, I think then it kind of sunk in, and I'm like, oh, okay, we're doing this. We're going to have a baby. And then they started explaining the process and what was going to happen. Because of the high blood pressure, they put you on magnesium sulfate so that you don't possibly have a stroke while you're giving birth. So that's a little scary to have that realization. But at the same time, I think just my gut feeling was everything's going to be okay. Don't panic. Don't worry. I think my husband was more panicked, more worried. My father-in-law came to the hospital, and my best friend who lives here. And my father-in-law was so, he didn't show it while he was there, but we didn't know this until afterwards. He stayed out in the hallway the whole time, because he said, I look so bad. He was so scared that something was going to happen. So he couldn't bring himself to leave and just wanted to make sure that everything went well. And considering I didn't have her until 2:30 in the morning, he was there for quite some time waiting out in the hallway. Like, oh my gosh. But he even talks about it still, that it really scared him to see me because of my coloring and how I looked, and then to hear what the doctors were saying. So I think for me, I was more at ease with it and just had this sense of, you know, everything's going to be okay. We're going to be okay. We're having the baby. I haven't had a baby before, so for some people, this is how it goes. Others, I know it's easier for some, harder for others. I've had friends that have been in labor for 3 days. My sister-in-law had just had my niece, and she was in labor for 3 days, and then they had to do an emergency C-section. So, you know, you have the stuff in the back of your head, and we had always, as part of our birth plan that they have you set up when you do the birthing classes, it had always been me and my husband's opinion, do whatever you have to do to get the baby here safe. If that means a cesarean section, fine. If that means we have to induce and have her early, fine. You do what you need to do so that she's here safely, and to keep, I guess, minimal problems from occurring during the whole process, you know, what you can, what's in your control.
Did you have any reactions to the magnesium?
Yes. Well, it just made me so tired. So it's similar to taking Benadryl for me, where it just makes me drowsy. I kind of felt a little, you know, buzzed, not completely there. Sometimes it was hard to talk because of it. You know, it's this heavy-duty muscle relaxer. And that was, I think, hard for my husband to understand. And I have a biology background. So a lot of the things that the doctors were saying, I understand the mechanism and how they're working in the body. I had a lot of classes in human anatomy. I was looking at becoming a doctor myself when I was going through my undergrad. So some of this stuff didn't scare me like it did my husband. It made sense. But it also made me know that the process was going to be a little bit harder. The magnesium sulfate, because it relaxes your muscles and your arteries and your veins to help prevent the stroke, that is also affecting the birth process. So they can induce and tell your body to the cervix to open up, your abdomen to have the contractions, but at the same time you have this other drug in there telling your body, relax, muscles relax. So it, I think, lengthens that whole process and makes it a little bit different than most people have, because then they have to give you more stimulating drugs for the birth process, like Pitocin, which we're trying to avoid, and it wasn't progressing the way that they wanted to. So they gave me a gel to open up the cervix and start the induction at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and kind of waited to see what was going to happen. And that wasn't really progressing the way that they liked to see, so they did another one. And that still didn't help. So then they started, they may have given me a third gel. And then after that, then they said, okay, we're going to go to the Pitocin. And they broke my water, and the contractions had started before they gave me the Pitocin. And they asked me if I wanted an epidural at that point. And I'm like, oh, at least I can handle this. This is fine. But that's also part of the magnesium sulfate that they give you. Those contractions aren't as intense as they normally would be during the birth process. So I wasn't feeling them the way that they could be. So I told him, let's wait, let him go, because there was other women there. They're like, he'll come to you maybe the next or even one more. And I'm like, oh, that should be fine. I'm okay right now. I can handle it. And then they gave me the Pitocin. And it really pushed those contractions over the edge. And I had a friend who had told me she had to be induced, and that the Pitocin just put her on edge with the contractions, and it was pretty intense. And I was like, well, that's a kind word for it, intense. Because it took it to a whole new level that I wasn't expecting. I knew you were going to have pain, but you don't know in your head. You can't conceive that pain because you don't have anything to compare it to yet. So that's when I told my husband, like, get me the epidural now, so that they can come in here. So I did have an epidural. And shortly after the epidural is when they wanted me to start pushing. And up until this point, you know, it was just the nurse coming in, checking on me, and making sure everything was okay, and checking to see if I was dilating and where I was. I don't think that I had seen saw the doctor one time in between. So the rest of the time it was just there with the labor and delivery nurses, and they were taking really good care of us and making sure everything was good. Even before then, they found out I did not have lunch. It was about 4:30, and I finally, I'm like, I have to eat something. Can I eat something? Because I knew once you get past a certain point, they're not going to let me eat anything. So they were super good and snuck me in a cheeseburger and some french fries so that I could kind of continue on. I don't think I could have done it without having any food. But I know that they do have, you know, that's a big thing, because if you have to go have a C-section or have to go in for some kind of a surgery, they don't want you eating. So I was thankful for that. And then I just think It seems like looking back that you feel like this loss of time while you're there. Like it's this black hole and you don't have a concept of where you're at or what time it is, especially once they started the Pitocin and then you get that epidural and then you start pushing. I felt like things were kind of in slow motion and I didn't realize how much time had passed from that first dose of the Pitocin. And then when you do find out, you're like, oh my gosh, I've been doing this for how long? What? Because I pushed for almost 3.5 hours. And from the first time that she told me they could see the head, it was a while. It was a couple hours of pushing. And I finally got to a point where I had to I grabbed my husband and the nurse and I told her, I am exhausted. I can't keep pushing. I know you said her head's there, but how much longer am I going to have to push? And at this point, the doctor, and I think this is where I was concerned about having the same doctor all the way through. My doctor knew this is what we wanted. If you have to cut, cut. If you need to do a C-section, do a C-section. Whatever you need to do, do it. And having a new doctor who didn't really have that interaction with me, even though he could read your chart, see what was in there, I don't know that he had the time to check all of that. And there's a different culture here in Flagstaff with birthing. So we joked with it with our labor and delivery nurse in our classes. It's very natural. No one wants any drugs. No one wants you to interfere. And she said sometimes that interferes and puts the baby at risk. And we're like, well, we're not those people. So even on my birth plan to begin with, just to mess with her, we put everything possible that we knew would set her off. And she just laughed. And we're like, Tess, the most important thing is that she gets here okay. So he didn't know that. And he, I think, was trying to keep everything supernatural and let it go on its own. But he did finally get to a point. And he said, okay, you have this band of tissue that we can't stretch because they were trying to stretch it with their hands, which that's when you're very happy you have an epidural because she did part of it without the epidural, which is no fun. And he said, that tissue just doesn't want to give. We can't get her out, and I don't want it to affect her. She's been in the birth canal for a while, and her head's been there for a while. So he said, I can cut you, and she'll come out right away. He said, we can have you keep pushing and hope that you tear if you don't want me to cut you. We can try, which I think they had tried, but it wasn't working either, the suction. We can do that again. And I told him, just cut me. And my husband's like, wait, what do you mean? So he had some concerns because when you talk about that and the way that the doctor put it, he did say, we just want to cut you. My husband's like, wait, you're going to cut what? What are you cutting? Why are you cutting her? It wasn't registering to him, even though he had been through all the classes and knew what could happen. It wasn't registering to him what they would be cutting and what they would be doing. And the doctor said, well, I know if I cut her and we're just going to cut this tissue. And he explained it a little bit more to my husband. And he's like, she'll deliver like that. And I told him, if you would have told me this 2.5 hours ago, because it was about an hour in where they could see her head, I would have told you to cut me then. And he said, okay, we'll cut. We'll go for it. And yeah, as soon as he did that cut, she was right out. And then that's the point where you I think my husband thought, okay, it's over. But I knew, okay, we still have to deliver the placenta. So they give you a second to rest. And they went and checked her, and we knew she was good, and I got to see her, and they went and gave her, you know, wiped her down, and were checking all her vitals. And that's the doctors sitting down there, and I could tell there was something else going on. And he took a little moment, and he said, okay, her temperature was a little low because the magnesium sulfate also affects the baby. So they wanted to get her and warm her up and just make sure she was okay, because they knew it would affect her, and that he said it's going to make her a little sleepy, and we're going to bring her over here. I'm trying to deliver your placenta. I needed to do a couple pushes again, which I did, and he's like, I have to talk to you. This is not going well. And at this point, my epidural is starting to wear off. And he starts to explain that my placenta isn't delivering, and he is going to have to pull it out. So I think even more disturbing was watching my husband, his face, because now I have a doctor reaching in with his hand to pull out my placenta, and then also explaining to us at the same time while he's doing it, I have to get it all. He's laying it out in a tray, because if I miss a piece, you can have internal bleeding, and that's not good. You'd have to have surgery. So we're like, okay, make sure you get everything. But as my epidural's wearing off and he's doing this, I felt like I was climbing up the ceiling. This was even more intense than the contractions. And then to see my husband making his faces. And he's standing there squinting and wincing. He's like, he goes over to the doctor and he's like, do you really have to keep doing this? Because it really looks like it's hurting her. I said, no kidding, it is. But, and then he said, yeah, if we don't get it, it's very bad news. So he's like, it won't take that much longer. I think I've almost got it all. Maybe you should go look at the baby. So he kind of took a moment, but then he stood there and held my hand, and we waited till they got all of that out, and then they had to sew up the episiotomy, which was an experience when you have all that pain meds worn off. The stitches were not fun at all. So, I don't think you don't think about that stuff when you're going in to have a baby. And then when it happens, it's a whole new experience and a different, you know, kind of sense of pain, and you get an appreciation for other women who have gone through it and had to do it, and knowing that, okay, this has happened, but I still know it could be worse. I've heard worse. But at the same time, you don't want to, you know that this is how it was for you, and you kind of take it in, and at the end you have this beautiful little baby, so it makes it worth it.
Were you able to nurse and everything, or do you not want to?
I was able to nurse, so that was another concern. My blood pressure, even after having her, was still high. They need to leave you on the magnesium sulfate until it comes back down, because even after having the baby, you can still have that stroke afterwards because of the high blood pressure. So it wasn't until about 4:30 in the morning where I finally got to go to a room and rest. And they, you know, continually monitor your blood pressure at that point to make sure that it's coming down. And mine wasn't. It actually got even higher even the next day in the afternoon, to the point where, you know, we have all these visitors coming. You have the grandparents wanting to come and see the baby, and the nurse had to make everybody leave after taking my blood pressure. She's like, no, she's too high. It was 176, like over 110, and she's shooed everybody out of the room. And I think that something else that was on top of that was they were hearing a murmur with my daughter's heart. So they were bringing a specialist in. So you have that to look at. They didn't know if it was just because up here in Flagstaff, there's a hole that takes a while to close after birth. It takes a little bit longer here because of the altitude. So they didn't know if that's what they were hearing or if that she possibly had something wrong with the heart valves and needed to have more attention. So we did end up having to have a specialist come in to look at that. So that's also there with you. And I think adding to a little bit of stress and the blood pressure. So trying to really give myself time to rest after was a little difficult with the preeclampsia and the blood pressure. And then she was very sleepy, drowsy from the magnesium sulfate, and she didn't want to eat at first. So we had to have a specialist come in to help with that, one of the lactation specialists from the hospital came in to talk to us. Because the other thing that happened too, because of the medication, is my milk wasn't coming in as quickly as it should have. So that was another experience. We had to have formula at first because my milk was there, but it wasn't enough. And then it was also getting my daughter to eat because she was so tired. She didn't want to eat, so she really wasn't sucking the way she needed to. So we had to hook up a little tube to a formula bottle and then have her breastfeed with the tube that first day and a half, maybe 2 days. And then it seemed like it was better. So it's, again, another just unexpected thing that you get to experience. And it was like, well, whatever we need to do to get her to where she needs to be. And it worked. And she started kind of coming out of it after that medication started kind of pushing out of her system too. But they had to keep me an extra day in the hospital because of the high blood pressure. And they really do want you to get home, to be in your own environment, to be with the baby. I think maybe I should have been in the hospital another day. Maybe even on the magnesium sulfate another day. The blood pressure was a problem the first at least 3 weeks after I had her when I went home. It took a long time for it to get back to normal. But the flip side of that is, you know, you're breastfeeding. You don't want to be, if you're on some medication, then you're baby can't breastfeed. So if you want to try to keep there, the doctors are trying to weigh that, the benefits of breastfeeding versus how bad is your blood pressure. Do we need to medicate you so that you go straight to formula? And that will be that. So I think those first few weeks as a parent, you're taking that into. And you suck it up and wait and see. And looking back on it, like, you know, it probably really should have been on some medication. But we're here. It was fine. It just took a lot longer for that recovery. And I think it's hard when you're a first-time parent taking care of yourself those first few weeks especially and taking the time to rest and let your body recuperate from everything. It's not in your nature. You just want to go and take care of that baby and put them before yourself. And again, looking back, I'm like, oh, well, that probably wasn't the best decision for myself. But we made it through it. And like I said, it took a while, but the blood pressure came down and things kind of settled and we got back to normal. We did have more with the heart murmur. My daughter's so tiny. She's just petite. They think because of that, you really hear everything from her heart when they listen to it. We had to go and see a specialist even after a year because they could still hear this murmur there. But the pediatric cardiac specialist, he was like, she doesn't have any fat on the front and it echoes on her. So she's normal, she's fine. But we did have that too, where you still have these appointments that you're going to, these little tiny scares here and there where you have to worry, is everything okay? And at that point, I still think it's a lot of listening to your gut that it's going to work out, it's going to be fine.
So when you reflect back on this experience, like, what are your thoughts and feelings? Is there a way you can, you know, a word or a phrasing of words that kind of reflects that?
The whole experience? I think it's very intense, but at the same time gratifying and overwhelming. Definitely this, you have just this whole overwhelming feelings of emotion the whole time, especially when you sit back and think about it, because as you're going through it, you don't always have the time to feel. But when you look at what you've gone through and when you look down at that baby, yeah, it's just this overwhelming joy, overwhelming relief, overwhelming even fear, because you have that going through your whole body and you just release it and let it go and see what you have at the end. And it's I think the whole birthing process, just a release of emotion, period. And feeling all of those things that you're going to feel all throughout this child's life. Joy, being scared, relief, pain. It's all kind of there in that first state and it just takes over you and then you let it go. And I think it sets you up for childhood for your baby and knowing that, okay, I've already had all of that. I'm probably going to have it again, but it's going to be in steps and stages. I think the birthing process, you just have it all at one time. And then it's just this huge release. So, you know, we keep going back and reliving some of those things when we have little milestones happen or when something comes up or someone else has a baby and you talk about the whole experience with them. And you also at the same time find out, okay, I'm not alone in what I experienced. And it brings, I think, people closer together too.
I think that was a great ending. Yeah, excellent. Okay. Oh, no, I'm